Henry Mancini and the group in the Days of Wine and Roses. See a mystery theater at 1108. This is KOIN in Portland. It's 11 o'clock.
CBS News. South Vietnamese President Tu has told his people that the bombing of his palace in Saigon Tuesday was not a coup and that he still has the support of the armed forces. I'm Ann Crosman reporting on the CBS Radio Network. President Tu went on nationwide radio after the bombing and said it was the work of a group of people, but denied it was an attempt to overthrow his government. Bruce Dunning has a report on the bombing.
Vietnamese sources said two people were killed and three wounded in the bombing attack on the presidential palace. But government spokesman emphasized that President Tu's immediate family was safe and unharmed. The dead and wounded were described as employees of the presidential palace, but there was no information on who they were or what their jobs were. The attack came during the morning rush hour as the streets were jammed with people. A single South Vietnamese Air Force jet fighter made one pass over the palace and then came back to drop its bombs. Anti-aircraft guns around the palace opened up on the American-built jet, but it swung southward after dropping its bombs and disappeared. The government immediately imposed a 24-hour curfew on the city, ordering all people to return to their homes and remain there. Within moments, people jammed the streets in panicky attempts to get home. All troops in the Saigon region were placed on so-called red alert, the highest level alert. Bruce Dunning, CBS News, Saigon.
The pilot of the plane that attacked the palace has been identified as Lieutenant Nguyen Tan Trung. He was based in Bien Hoa. He was coming back from a bombing mission when he attacked the palace. His whereabouts at this time are not known. About 65 Vietnamese children, most of them orphans, arrived in California Monday night, and a second group of nearly 300 more was en route from Indochina. The new arrivals join about 1,200 orphans already adopted by Americans and Canadians. More news in a minute.
If you ever use a hemorrhoid preparation, you should know this. Vaseline Brands has news. It's Hemorrhoid Ointment. Hemorrhoid works fast, helps protect, with a proven medical ingredient for soothing occlusion. And Hemorrhoid gives you only this key ingredient, so it gives you more than the leading preparation. Now at your first sign of pain, burning, and itching, turn to soothing Hemorrhoid. Hemorrhoid from Vaseline Brands. Use only as directed.
Hi, I'm Mike Roy here with Denny Bracken for The Cooking Thing.
And we're heard every Monday through Saturday on the CBS Radio Network. Now, let's see, tomorrow's Tuesday, so what treats do you have in the pantry for a chef?
Carrot cookies.
Carrot, what is this, a Bugs Bunny act or something?
I don't make
carrots out of cookies or cookies out of carrots or vegetables.
It's all done all the time. And my carrot cookies are some of the best there are. Ask any rabbit. Easy to make, too.
Not at all modest, are you?
No.
That's the super chef there with his carrot cookies tomorrow on The Cook Thing on CBS.
The trial of former Treasury Secretary John Conley resumes Tuesday morning in Washington. Conley is charged with accepting $10,000 in bribes from Associated Milk Producers in return for persuading former President Nixon to raise the federal milk support price. The chief government witness is Jake Jacobson, who says he gave Conley the money. Jed Duval reports on Monday's action in court.
The defense in the Connolly trial attempted to undo Jake Jacobson's story by reading aloud the other stories he told a year and a half ago. Edward Bennett Williams, John Connolly's lawyer, went through page after page of Jacobson's testimony to Senate investigators and to a federal grand jury late in 1973 and early the following year. The prosecution contends that at the time, Jacobson was mouthing a line he and Connolly had agreed upon to cover the actual cash payments to Connolly. The defense contends Connolly was offered money but refused it, and lawyer Williams today put Jacobson through the earlier story, reading sections and then asking, were those your answers? Much of the time, Jacobson had little to say but, yes, sir. Cross-examination of Jacobson will continue. Jed Duval, CBS News, at federal court in Washington.
District of Columbia police are investigating possible gambling and drug activities within the Agriculture Department. An agriculture official says the department conducted its own probe, then turned preliminary findings over to D.C. police. Now this message.
As a busy mother, Mrs. Bavardo says no time for pain.
I have three very, very active children. And on many occasions, I get headaches. Anacin gives me very fast relief.
Right, Mrs. Bavardo's. While all three leading pain relievers reach an effective level in your bloodstream in minutes, in the final analysis, only Anacin hits and holds the highest level.
And with Anacin, I have my headache gone and I have no upset stomach.
Next headache, take Anacin for a higher level of pain reliever. Take only as directed.
You say you took a breath and you came up short. Better see a doctor for a full report. It's probably nothing, but then again, who knows what lurks in the lungs of men. The doctor do.
And only your doctor can spot the breath robbers. Asthma, emphysema, bronchitis, tuberculosis. See him to be sure. Your Lung Association considers it a matter of life and breath.
The National Safety Council reports an upturn in traffic deaths the first 2 months of this year. Fatalities rose 6% from the same 2 months last year. The council spokesman says there's not as much emphasis on reduced driving and cutting speed as there was last year during the gasoline shortage. I'm Ann Crosman, CBS News.
Bonneville Power Administrator Donald Hodel has lashed out against a call for further testimony regarding BPA's 27% rate increase. Hodel says the action by the staff of the Federal Power Commission is arbitrary and unexplained. Hodel said the staff's motion, in his words, "In our view, this may jeopardize the power supply of the Pacific Northwest." He said that since Undersecretary of the Interior John Whitaker had contended earlier no hearing was required, the FPC cannot restructure the rate situation without good and sufficient reason. He says, quoting once again, "As far as we're concerned, the rate increase is on and good until December of 1979. A regional highway administration official announces bids are being called for reconstruction of a portion of Oregon State Route 126, beginning in Mapleton and extending west some 4 6/10 miles. Bids also are being called for the relocation and construction of about 1 mile of a Southern Pacific Railroad main line, siding, and spur trackage in Siuslaw National Forest in Lane County. The bids will be received at the Office of the Federal Highway Projects in Vancouver, Washington until May 14th. Portland city officials say work is not expected to begin for more than 1 year on turning Meyer and Frank's downtown parking lot into a multi-purpose park. City planning director Ernie Bonner estimates that construction of the Pioneer Square Park may be underway by summer of 1976. Bill Scott, executive assistant to Mayor Neil Goldschmidt, says approval of a $1.5 million federal grant toward purchase of the block should speed up efforts to provide local funding. The weather forecast for the Portland-Vancouver area calls for mostly fair tonight, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Cold nights with the lows 30 to 35 degrees, the highs in the mid-50s. Variable winds at 5 to 12 miles per hour. Chance of measurable rainfall 10% through Tuesday. Right now in downtown Portland, the temperature stands at 43 degrees. That's KOIN News to 1108. I'm Bill Garrity.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall, pilot of this shadowy craft which wends its mysterious way through the uncharted depths of your very own imagination. They were giants, those founding fathers of ours. Not only were they superb statesmen and soldiers, they were men of many spectacular achievements. In these modern times, when so many of us are confined to our own particular calling, it's hard to conceive of men who could turn a talented hand to anything that needed doing. Consider Benjamin Franklin now. He was a writer, a publisher, a philosopher, a diplomat, an inventor, a scientist, and according to the French, who should know something about it, he was a formidable lover. So, you shouldn't be too surprised to discover that Ben Franklin was also a detective.
Benjamin Franklin. Benjamin Franklin.
Who are you?
I'm Captain William Clemens.
Clemens died 20 years ago.
I am his ghost.
You can't be his ghost.
Why do you say that?
Because everything that was Will Clemens, his body, his soul, are burning in the eternal fires of hell.
I am the ghost of William Clemens.
Why have you come here?
To kill Ben Franklin.
Why?
You know why. You damned impertinent, interfering publisher.
The truth.
From now on, you can print it in hell.
Our mystery drama, The Benjamin Franklin Murder Case, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Sam Dan and stars Paul Hecht. It is sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
When you say Bud, you've said a lot of things nobody else can say. When you say Bud, you've gone as far as you can go to get the to do it all. When you say but, you say you care enough to only walk the king of fears.
There is no other one, there's only something less, because the king of fears is leading all the rest. When you say but, Weiser,
you've said it all.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
You meet the nicest people when you lunch or dine at the Captain's Corner. The Captain's Corner in the Century Tower building is where people count on a quality menu and friendly service. Individual attention to patrons is one reason the Captain's Corner is a favorite all over Portland, and that goes for the lounge. For excellent lunching or dining, stop at Downtown's own Captain's Corner, inside the Century Tower building on Southwest 12th between Jefferson and Main, with free parking.
Great Spirit, whose voice in the winds I hear, make me walk in beauty. Make my heart respect all you have made.
In some Americans today, the spirit of that Indian prayer is reborn. But now everyone must get involved in the struggle against pollution and litter. Write Keep America Beautiful, 99 Park Avenue, New York, New York. People start pollution. People can stop it.
A public service message of this station and the Advertising Council.
The year is 1750, and things are relatively quiet in the American colonies. So far, no one is seriously advocating rebellion. And even so, Sarah Clemens would pay no heed to talk of rebellion. Sarah Clemens is a young lady who has troubles enough of her own. We are in the city of Philadelphia. We say city because we know Philadelphia as a city. But back in 1750, the only settled place in all of North America that could legitimately claim to be a city would be Mexico City. Well, getting back to Sarah Clemens and her problems, the most pressing one is concerned with, don't laugh, ghosts.
Young woman.
Please, sir.
I say, young woman, I cannot call you a young lady. You will come to a bad end.
Sir.
But me no sirs. Oh, you are a cool one, a sly one. But those innocent-looking eyes don't take in aimless Edward Chiver. No, they don't.
Sir, what are you talking about?
Oh, you stand there bold as brass, cool as ice, and you say, what am I talking about? Young woman, you belong in the theater. You do. You not only have the talent, but you've got the morals of an actress.
Sir, I will not permit you to insult me in my own parlor.
You almost sold me this house.
Almost? I thought we had an agreement.
I'm breaking that agreement.
But why?
No, stop it. Stop blinking them innocent eyes and asking why.
But I am asking. Why?
Because the Clemens house is a haunted house.
I hear you correctly.
The Clemens house is a haunted house. That's what everyone in town is saying.
Oh, tavern loafers.
Ah, so you do admit people are talking about
people, it. People, drunkards, idlers, vagrants. Anytime a house stands empty, the ridiculous rumors. What, the Clemens house is the finest dwelling in the province of Pennsylvania.
Then why don't you live there? Why do you want to sell it?
Oh, Mr. Chiver, I've already discussed this entire matter. I cannot afford to maintain so large a place.
You can't? Why can't you?
I don't need all those rooms. It requires help, and I can't afford servants.
You could buy slaves.
Mr. Chiver.
Mr. Chiver, what?
It would violate every one of my moral, ethical, and religious principles to own the body and soul of another human being.
Beggars can't be choosers.
Just tell me, sir, what affair is it of yours?
You say you can't afford servants and you won't have slaves. But you could afford servants if you was to turn the place into a tavern.
Never.
It's a good, respectable trade, and you're pretty enough wench to attract the business.
Sir, this impertinence can... If you do not wish to purchase the property, I'm sure there are plenty of others.
How long have you been trying to sell the house?
Oh,
if it's such a bargain, how come it ain't been snapped up?
Because...
No, ma'am, it won't do. The house is haunted.
Very well, sir. Have it your way.
Aha! Then you admit it.
I admit only this, Mr. Chiver. I was wrong about you. When you first inquired about the house, I said to myself, here is a man of judgment. Here is a shrewd and sensible man of the world. Here is probably the keenest man of business in the entire province of Maryland.
Delaware.
As you will. But what do I discover on closer examination? A timid, irresolute waverer. You are losing the opportunity of a lifetime.
To buy a haunted house.
How can the house be haunted? Haunted by what?
Ghosts.
Oh, you are hard-headed. Practical, no-nonsense gentleman of affairs, a member of your provincial House of Delegates. You believe in ghosts?
Well,
be kind enough to leave the premises at once. Sir, you are a fraud.
Now, Miss Clemens.
Oh, yes.
I won't...
There may be rumors spread by stupid gossipers that the Clemens house is haunted. And this has made buyers scarce and reduced the price. But shouldn't you, as a shrewd trader, profit from my distress?
Now, miss, you have no right to accuse
me
of...
Go on, take unfair advantage of me.
Well, I'll think about it.
Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Richard.
I knocked, but no one heard me.
Mr. Chiver and I are transacting some business.
So I just walked in.
Mr. Chiver, may I present my cousin, Mr. Richard LaPorte?
Your servant, sir.
Howdy.
Richard, Mr. Chiver is going to buy the Clemens house.
Well, now, I never...
He intends to make a tavern of it.
Now, see here, I didn't say that...
Tavern?
And why not?
Well, that would be... It would be the sacrilege. Why, Mr. William Penn himself slept in the blue bedroom
when... Oh, come, Richard. You and I spoke about this many times, and I thought I'd settled it.
But a tavern?
Well, of course. Shouldn't the common folk also have a beautiful place?
I ain't even said I'm going to buy, much less make a tavern.
Oh, of course you will, Mr. Chiver.
My dear Sarah, a tavern...
Oh, Richard, I thought you shared my belief that no person should own a house that exceeds his needs for shelter. When we marry, this place which my mother left me will suffice for us.
Just hold on while I ask this young fellow here a question. LaPorte. I want you to look me square in the eye and say yes or no. Is the old Clemens house haunted?
Yes.
Well, Miss Clemens, see?
Richard is an incurable romantic.
You say the house is haunted, young fellow?
Yes, it is haunted. Haunted by demons of the past.
Oh, nonsense, Richard.
Haunted by memories, haunted by the ghosts of Clemens as long dead.
Well, all I can say to you, Miss Clemens, is good day.
Wait.
What for? Here, this young man, your own intended, admits, confesses...
Oh, it's nonsense.
And he ain't no tavern vagabond neither, far as I can
see. But there are no ghosts.
That ain't what Mr. LaPorte here says.
Of course, there are ghosts. That's because the past never dies.
Miss Clemens, how can you say there are no ghosts when this man, who is to become your lord and master...
Oh, no, no. That is not the relationship we envisage, is it, Richard?
Oh, no, each of us will have an equal voice.
Son, you're asking for more trouble than you can handle. But don't get me off the subject.
What is the subject, sir?
Ghosts. Mr. Laporte says there are ghosts in that house.
Richard is only using a figure of speech. He doesn't mean there are actual ghosts.
But I do.
And I say good day to you both.
Mr. Chiver.
He's right, my dear.
Oh, Richard. You sounded so medieval.
The ghosts of the Clemenses. You believe in them, too. And that's why you want to sell the house. You're ashamed of them.
What are you trying to say?
You are ashamed of the fact that the first William Clemens was a pirate and slaver.
That's just malicious rumor.
Oh, my dear, it's an unfortunate fact. The family fortune was founded on blood. You were a child growing up in that house. You knew it. You were ashamed.
Richard, I shall become extremely angry.
I was a child, too. The poor relation invited to play. And my eyes were open. I saw everything.
Please, Richard.
We both talked about it constantly. Death. Murder. How frightened we were of the old man. The ghost of the old man. The murderer, the pirate.
Richard, those were childhood fancies. Nothing more. Nothing more. Ghosts do not, cannot exist.
What was that question again, sir?
What I asked, Mr. Franklin, was, do you believe in ghosts?
Of course, Mr. Chiver.
You do?
Certainly, sir. All of us are ghosts. Inside each of us are the ghosts of dead ideas.
You know the old Clemens house?
Yes, I do.
Now, the girl wants to sell. I can buy it cheap. A bargain.
Do you need advice to take advantage of a bargain?
It might not be a bargain.
Uh-huh.
If it's haunted.
Oh.
Can a house be haunted?
Mr. Chiver, I cannot give you that answer, but I can suggest how you might find one.
Now you're talking.
Go up to the house. When you want to learn something, investigate for yourself.
Well, you don't have to be smart to think of that.
But the fact is, you didn't think of it.
Oh.
What I have suggested is something new among natural philosophers. It is called the scientific method.
But that's nothing but old-fashioned horse sense.
Exactly, Mr. Chiver. Exactly.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm going up there and see for myself. Be. The wind down the chimney.
Huh?
Hey, there's somebody in here. Who's here? Show yourself. Whoever you are, show yourself.
Dead man, tell no tales.
I'm not afraid of you. Who are you? Show yourself. That voice. It's coming from the chimney.
Kill.
No, it's coming from the wall. It's coming from all over. Somebody's in here with me. Somebody. But I ain't scared. Listen, even if you are a ghost, I'm going to buy the house and burn it down and build a better one. I ain't scared. No. No. Who's here? Who are you? Oh, it's a sailor. Get away from me. Get away. Who are you? What do you want? Gold. You're choking me. Please. Stop.
Light pouring in through the parlor window of the old Clemens mansion reveals a body lying on the floor. Sightless eyes staring with terror. Face contorted with agony. But At least the efficacy of the scientific method has once again been affirmed. Is there such a thing as a ghost? Amos Chiver has found out the hard way. You have some things to find out also when I return shortly with Act Two.
Some people think we play ping pong all day. They're wrong. The USO isn't all fun and games. Today, the USO has millions of problems like this one in Germany.
My family's going crazy living in a tiny apartment. Where can we live?
Today's USO has millions of problems like this one in Asia.
I'm hooked on drugs. Where can I get help?
Or this problem in Athens.
Our marriage is breaking up. Can you help us?
Today's USO has little time for ping pong. We've got serious work to do. We've got lots of new problems here and overseas. The problems are big. How big? Well, if someone asks you, who needs the USO? Tell them,
we do! We do!
Over 5 million American military personnel and their families need today's USO. And because we get no government funds, we need all your support. Please give to USO through the United Way or local USO campaign.
Who knows how to help you solve your shopping problems? Your Better Business Bureau knows.
Sam Spud, private investigator.
Oh, Sam, I'm so glad you called.
You sound rattled, Angel.
I'm frantic, Sam. I went to buy the carpet for the office, and I got so confused. There are too many kinds. I didn't know what to ask or what to buy.
I'll help you, young lady.
Mercy, who are you?
I'm the man from the Better Business Bureau. Now, when you're choosing carpet, make sure you pick a long-wearing one that'll go with your walls, draperies, and upholstery. Beware of so-called fantastic bargains. And don't buy a carpet that isn't labeled as to fiber content.
Oh, Sam, now I know what to look for and ask before I buy a carpet.
You floor me, Angel.
Just another helpful tip from your Better Business Bureau.
Come, Mr. Benjamin Franklin of Philadelphia will find plenty of things to make him angry. The arrogance of the British, the short-sightedness of his fellow Americans, the stubbornness of the French, and the haughtiness of the Spanish. But right now, he is as furious as he will ever be. A man named Chiver solicited his advice, followed it, and was killed, or at least is dead, because he did so. So right now, on this late summer morning in the autumn of 1750, we find our Mr. Franklin in a rare mood indeed.
I only want you to tell me, Doctor, was he murdered? Yes, well, that doesn't answer the question.
Well, he has some redness about the throat.
Was he strangled?
He might have been. But I see no finger marks.
Well, could the killer have worn gloves?
Could the killer have worn gloves? We have yet to ascertain whether or not there was a killer. Therefore, the question cannot be answered in the form that it was couched.
If he wasn't strangled, what was the cause of death?
He also has a bruise on his head.
Uh-huh. Was he struck?
He may have been. On the other hand, he may have hit his head against some sharp object when he fell to the floor.
Dr. Benson, do you ever commit yourself?
He may have died of fright.
Fright?
I have never seen such terror on the face of a corpse.
But can a man die of fright?
Some doctors say yes. Some say no. May I ask your interest in the case, Mr. Franklin?
The dead gentleman and I have a mutual friend. Therefore, I am collecting his effects and sending them down to his home in Wilmington.
Oh, you may want this along with his other possession, Mr. Franklin.
Huh? What is it?
It seems to be a gold button of some kind.
Huh. Where did you find it?
It was clutched in his hand. Actually, he was holding it so tightly, I had to pry his fingers apart.
Why didn't you tell me this before?
Well, is it significant?
A button. You can see it's been torn from a coat. Probably he was struggling with his assailant, and in the
fight... Now, that is if there was an assailant.
Doctor, in every man's life, there comes a time when finally he must commit himself.
That may be true. On the other hand...
Thank you, Doctor. Now, Sarah, I want you to look at this button.
How could that poor man have died in the house?
Obviously, the murderous ghost...
The button, Sarah.
Richard, look.
Do you recognize it?
It's the kind of button that old Captain William Clemens wore.
William Clemens, who built this house?
This gold button, with the star and the anchor. It was on all his uniforms.
Well, then it was the ghost of William Clemens.
Oh, no.
What do you say to that, Mr. Franklin?
I say we have a problem. Assume it was a ghost.
Hmm.
Is a ghost substantial?
How can a ghost be substantial?
If he were substantial, he couldn't be a ghost.
Then why would his clothes be substantial? No, Mr. Chivers was engaged in combat, mortal combat.
With whom?
Now, I say a man followed Mr. Chiver to the house or waited for him there and killed him. I say a man because it's hard to conceive of a woman strong enough.
Mr. Franklin, it was Captain Clemens' ghost. The button proves it.
Not conclusively. Captain Clemens wasn't a pirate.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Franklin.
That is, not a pirate in name. He was a privateer. He had the Queen's permission to prey upon French, Spanish, and Dutch merchant ships. He fancied himself a naval officer. His men wore uniforms. The higher ranks all had buttons, just like that one. As a matter of fact, I know another man in this town who once wore a navy coat. I remember this button. Huh. I was just a youngster, but I do remember this button.
If it ain't Mr. Franklin.
Good day, Abner.
To what do I owe the honor?
I've come here to see if I can arrange to have you hang.
Oh? What did I do?
What did you do? What haven't you done, you scoundrel? You sold whiskey and guns to the Indians. You bought stolen merchandise from pirates.
Ah, but none of it proved.
Ah, but all of it true.
The commandment warns us against the bearing of false witness.
Here we have the devil quoting scripture.
Why not? The devil can read. Now, how do you hope to hang me?
For the murder of Amos Chiver.
You mean the poor fellow from Wilmington?
Yes, Abner, the poor fellow from Wilmington.
Oh, hadn't you heard? He was killed by a ghost. Everyone knows the Clements house is haunted.
No, he wasn't killed by a ghost.
No. Who did it?
I think you did it, Abner.
Why would I want to kill the man? I didn't even know him.
And you didn't want to get to know him either.
You're a hard man to follow, Mr. Franklin. But I know you always wind up someplace, so I'll listen.
Thank you. You don't like competition, Abner. You've been known to run people who threatened your business out of town.
Well, that's one way to look at it. Another way would be to say I showed them where opportunities were greater elsewhere.
Amos Chiver was going to buy the Clemens place just up the street from here and turn it into a tavern.
And for that I killed him?
You took advantage of Clemens' house reputation, hid there in your old navy coat, and tried to scare him.
I did?
But I suppose he didn't scare. There was a fight. You killed him.
You write good stories in your paper, Mr. Franklin, but if you write this one, you've got to prove it.
I've got the proof right here. This button...
What button?
You wore this button when you served with Captain Clemens as a privateer.
Well, how did you... Where did you get that button?
Try to guess where this button was found. Now, you're a man of lively imagination. Think.
Where did you get that button?
This button, Abner, was found clutched in the dead man's hand.
Yeah, but it can't be.
It was.
I haven't worn that coat. I haven't even seen that coat. It's worn 30 years.
Here comes the constable. What have you there, Mr. Partridge?
I've been to the back of this house like you said, Mr. Franklin.
Uh-huh.
You had no right to search my house.
The constable obtained a warrant.
And here's the coat.
Yes, indeed. Your old blue naval officer's coat.
Some of them buttons are missing, Mr. Franklin. But the ones that are still on here are just like the one you got in your hand.
I tell you, I was here all last night. I didn't set foot out of this tavern. Why, constable, you were here yourself.
So I was. till 10 o'clock.
And after 10 o'clock, who can vouch for you, Abner?
Well, I was with a...
Yes.
Well, I spent the rest of the night with a lady.
Who?
Well, being a gentleman, how could I possibly... You're a man of the world, Mr. Franklin. You appreciate my position.
Well, it is a gentleman's duty to die before permitting a lady's name to be sullied. Or so I've been led to understand.
Well, I'm not going to die for nobody. I was with... hang it, Mr. Franklin.
Yes, indeed, Abner. Hanging seems to be the order of the day.
I'm a married man. What's my wife going to say?
Chivalry is dead, Abner.
All right. I was with Charity Townsend.
Charity Townsend, aptly named. I doubt we have a lady in town more generous with her favors.
Abner, who's going to take the word of Charity Townsend?
Yeah, but it's true. You can ask her. You get... Oh, my Lord, what's my wife going to say?
You'll have to come along with me, Abner. Mr. Franklin, can I have that button to go with this coat as evidence?
Charity, are you telling the truth?
Oh, yes, Mr. Franklin. I can't lie. I mean, that's the source of my problems. I just can't lie.
You were with Abner all of last night.
Well, I could lie, you see, and save my reputation. But my dear old dad, he's in heaven right now. He said to me, girl, never tell a lie. And you know why? Folks aren't going to believe you anyhow, so you might as well be hanged for telling the truth.
Yes, about Abner.
Oh, I was, feeling a bit poorly last evening, so I thought a glass of wine might suit me. And after having a few, Abner says to me, Charity, you want to come to the back of the house? What for, I asks, and he says, I got some trophies I took when I was serving in the Navy. Well, I have a weakness for sailors' trophies, so I says, all right. But what's your wife going to say to me? I come into a private room. And he says, never fear, she'll be none the wiser. She's visiting her sister across the river in Camden Town.
So, you went with him?
Oh, but I'm telling you, everything was proper. We just sat and talked. Oh, he tells such stories. And before I knew it, the sun had come up.
A most unusual evening.
Oh, yes.
And so, you claim you were with Abner all of last night.
Well, I wish I could lie, but you see, I can't. Not even to save my reputation.
Yes, sir, Mr. Franklin. Judge Herkimer spoke with me an hour ago. He wants to hold the trial tomorrow.
Constable, may I see that coat and that button again?
Sure. I got them right here on the table. Look at them all you like.
Oh, thank you.
It's plain as day. That's the exact same button as the mother's on that coat. And there's three of them missing. This could be any one of them. Judge Herkimer says we might just as well prepare the scaffold now.
Before the trial?
Well, you know the judge, Mr. Franklin. He figures if a man ain't guilty, he wouldn't be in the prisoner's box in the first place.
Yes, and Charity's testimony?
Now, Mr. Franklin, you know what that's worth.
You suppose I might see Abner?
Can't imagine why, but you're welcome. And let me hold on to this coat and button for just a moment.
Well, Mr. Franklin, I guess you're right. You said you'd arrange to have me hung, and you've done it.
You think so?
You know, in my lifetime, I've done 100 things that called for hanging, but I always cheated the rope. And now I'm about to swing for something I never done.
I know. I can even prove it.
You can.
Abner, I have a problem, a most serious moral and religious problem.
Now, look here, Mr. Franklin. If you know I'm innocent...
Let us say you are innocent in particular, but guilty in general.
Yeah, but if you know I didn't kill Chiver, why let me swing for it?
I must search my conscience, examine my soul, as it were. You are an engaging but a thoroughgoing scoundrel. You are responsible in one way or another for the death of hundreds of people.
Well, scores would be more truthful.
Yes. Even now, some poor farmer on the fringes of the Ohio Territory could be murdered by an Indian using a musket that was purchased from you.
Well, that can't be proved.
Justice must be served.
Yeah, but that ain't justice.
Well, if it's just for you to go free when you're guilty, why is it unjust for you to hang when you're innocent? Now, come, Abner, you can't have it both ways.
Well, Mr. Franklin, please. Think the commandments. Thou shalt not lie. Thou shalt not bear false witness.
Oh, it's out of my hands, Abner. At this moment, within my soul, a battle is being fought for your life and freedom. Both sides are marshaling potent and convincing arguments. Shall you live? Shall you die? I must wait for the answer to be revealed to me.
And there he is, Abner, the old pirate, the old smuggler. Ironically, he faces the rope for a crime he didn't commit, according to Ben Franklin. But what sort of game is Ben playing? Perhaps his own words might answer the question. No, I am not amused by games of chance or even skill. For the most fascinating game of all is the game of life. The game continues when I return shortly with Act Three.
Inside you're free after all. You hear freedom spirit like a wild bird's call. Inside you're free after all. Living free, living free.
There's a long stretch of open road before you. You're at the controls of a Buick Century, a really fine mid-sized car. Comfort abounds. A sophisticated suspension system is smoothing the way. And under hood, a frugal V6 engine economically goes about its business. You're happy, you're free, and you're in a Buick.
Inside you're free.
God we trust. America speaks.
In the words of John F. Kennedy, the torch has been passed to a new generation. Born in this century, tempered by war, disciplined by a hard and bitter peace, proud of our ancient heritage, and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing of those human rights to which this nation has always been committed. With a good conscience, our only sure reward, with history, the final judge of our deeds, let us go forth to lead the land we love, asking his blessing and his help, but knowing that here on earth, God's work must truly be our own.
Presented by the Catholic Communications Foundation.
Retribution. Sooner or later, it overtakes us all. If not for the wrongs we have actually done, then perhaps for the wrong another has committed in our name. But one way or another, we pay the bill. Ben Franklin can prove that Abner didn't kill Amos Chimer. But why bother? Abner has killed enough people during his lifetime. It isn't as if the noose were being drawn around the neck of an innocent man.
You say you can prove I'm innocent, Ben? How?
Well, Charity claims you were with her all evening.
Charity? Well, who'd believe a woman like her?
Who? Tell me, Abner, if you were sitting on the jury, would you believe Charity?
Well, not if she swore on every Bible in Pennsylvania.
Interesting. And yet, in this case, you know she's telling the truth.
Well, but why do you say she's telling the truth?
Why should she lie? What does she gain by it?
Well, I could have paid her.
Yes, but you didn't. Because I know you didn't kill Chiver.
How? How do you know?
First, I have a little agreement here for you to sign. Read it.
I, Abner Merritt, do hereby agree to give to the Reverend Peter Quincy the sum of £350. What for?
The Reverend Quincy is the pastor in the village of Olmsted, which was destroyed in an Indian raid last week. The money will be used for rebuilding homes.
But
you supplied the Indians with weapons and the powder.
Oh, but I didn't.
Not directly, perhaps, but you did sell the muskets to unscrupulous traders. Read on.
The sum of £500 to Mr. Henry Hewitt, director of the Children's Orphanage. I ain't got that much money.
Raise it.
Oh, but I...
Read on.
You'll make a poor man out of me.
Poor, but happy. Poor in wealth and worldly goods, perhaps, but rich in the love of your fellow man.
Ah, no, I'll sign no such paper.
All right, then hang.
This is blackmail, you know.
Perhaps.
But how do I know you... How do I know you'll keep your bargain? How do I know you can prove that I'm innocent?
Now, that is an interesting speculation. But we waste each other's time. I have in my bag here a pen and a bottle of ink. May I please have your signature?
Oh, this is robbery. It's worse than piracy on the high seas.
And you should know.
All right. Where do I sign it?
On the bottom. Splendid. That's it. See, you now have an opportunity to create a new reputation for yourself. Till now, you have been reviled as a scoundrel. In the future, you shall be admired as a saint. Fortunate Abner.
Yeah, but the proof! The proof you promised!
Ah, yes, the proof. Mr. Partridge? Mr. Partridge!
What's up?
I'm afraid we'll have to release Abner.
Release? Why? Ain't he guilty?
No, sir. Please, come in here, sir. And leave the cell door open, Constable. Abner will be leaving.
But the button and the coat...
Precisely. They prove his innocence.
Like any fool can see that button is exactly the same as the buttons that are on that coat. You have to admit that.
I do.
Then what do you...
It is exactly the same kind of button, but it was not fastened to that coat. And if it was not fastened to that coat, it could not have been pulled off that coat.
But you can see that
now
if
let's
the button...
Let's really look at what's to be seen. What color is the coat?
Oh, any fool can see it's blue.
Now, since the button was obviously pulled away or torn away during a struggle, there is a small shred of material clinging to it. What color is this material?
Well, it's
red. Captain's red. While Abner's coat is Lieutenant's blue.
I should have seen it myself. I could have saved a fortune.
What's he saying, Mr. Franklin?
The poor man's so happy to be vindicated, he's delirious with joy.
But if Abner didn't kill Mr. Chiver, who did?
It should be obvious to everybody. The ghost. The ghost of Captain Clemens.
But, Mr. Franklin, isn't that impossible?
We should never try to define the impossible, my dear. We searched the house thoroughly.
And we found absolutely nothing.
You recognize the button as belonging to Captain Clemens as being part of his uniform. This means you were familiar with that uniform.
Oh, yes, sir. His uniform, his hats, his swords. They're all left hanging in his room, just as when he was alive. I remember we children used to spend hours up there.
Why didn't we find the uniform coat just before, when we searched the house?
Because the ghost is wearing it.
Oh, really, Richard?
Well, Richard's opinion is as good as anyone.
You mean you actually believe that a ghost could be up there?
Yes. And now our problem is to find out who the ghost is.
But how can we do that?
It'll be easy to recognize.
Mr. Franklin, am I hearing you correctly?
We shall recognize the ghost because, you see, he is branded.
How can a ghost...
He has committed murder, this ghost, and therefore he carries the murderer's mark.
What mark?
All murderers carry a mark. A mark which clearly proclaims them as killers.
But I've seen murderers. I haven't seen any identifying...
It's the brand of Cain. Sometimes it's visible on Earth, sometimes not.
Mr. Franklin, are you feeling quite all right?
Never better. Well, we must clear the place of its ghostly reputation, or else you shall never sell it. I think I'll go there myself this evening.
But that ghost, it's a murderer. Listen to me. I talk as if I believe it.
Well, why don't you believe it? The ghost has already committed murder.
I suppose I'll have to take my chance.
But you mustn't go alone. Richard, you...
No purpose in my going. What shall I discover? That there's a ghost? I already believe it.
Well, somebody should go with Mr. Franklin.
Oh, no. When a man goes seeking a wife or searching for a ghost, he travels faster when he travels alone. Now, no one is to mention the fact that I'm to visit the Clemens house this evening.
Yes, sir.
Oh, we three shall keep the secret.
Well, you know the saying. Three can keep a secret if two are dead.
Why can't we walk in the front door, Mr. Frank?
Shh. Keep your voice low, Abner. Now, slide the window up.
Up. That's it.
Let's climb inside.
Why are we going in like thieves?
Because I am hoping the ghost will enter by the front door. Listen.
I don't hear nothing.
Well, to the front room. Hurry. Shine that lantern.
Nobody here, Mr. Franklin?
Uh-oh. Listen. Listen. Where's it coming from?
Hey, hey. That don't sound like a human voice. It's a... It's Captain Clemens. The old man himself. And it's a captain. It's a ghost of the captain.
Well, where is it coming from,
Captain? It's a captain.
It's coming from the fireplace.
Huh? Yeah, that's the captain. That's how he talks. I'm getting out of here.
No, wait.
It's the captain. He said death couldn't keep him away. He'd come back. That's what he said.
Where is that voice coming from?
It ain't human. It's coming from everywhere. I don't know about you, but I'm going.
You're right, Abner. It is time we were leaving.
I'll never sell the house now. It's all over town. Abner's been telling everyone how the ghosts are all over the place. Thank you, Mr. Franklin.
Sarah, Mr. Franklin was only trying to help. Besides, what could he do? After all, how can a human being fight a ghost? Now, sir, do you believe the ghost of Captain Clemens haunts the house?
Richard, why do you object to Sarah's selling the Clemens house?
Well, it's just that it's haunted.
It isn't because you wanted to own it yourself one day?
Well, how could I ever own it?
You will at least share in the ownership when you marry Sarah.
Well, why would I want to own it?
Mr. Franklin, Richard was always unhappy there.
I know. That's why he wishes to own it. Richard was the poor, despised cousin who was patronized by the Clemenses. That's true, isn't it?
They were very kind to me.
The bread of charity is bitter when it is offered by the hand of arrogance. And so you dreamed, didn't you, of one day walking through that house, not as a petitioner, but as a master?
Yes. Yes. It's human to feel that way.
Yes, Richard. Why are you wearing a glove?
I have an infection from a poisonous plant.
So, you have discouraged Sarah from selling.
But he never said to me, don't sell.
He didn't have to. He spread the rumors that the house is haunted.
Well, everyone in Philadelphia knows...
You are the one, Richard, who keeps making sure that the reputation for the house being haunted is kept fresh and
clean.
Sir,
I cannot permit you to insult my fiancé.
I thought you were my friend, Mr. Franklin.
I am, Richard. And I am no fair-weather friend either. I shall stand by you as a friend, even though you are to be tried for murder.
Murder? Mr. Franklin!
Ask him, Sarah, ask him.
I deny it.
How can you deny it? How can you deny the brand of Cain? You killed Amos Chiver because he must have recognized you, and you knew I was going to be at the house last
Richard,
night.
Richard, he couldn't kill anybody. He's so timid.
You wanted to scare me, too. And your voice, oh, it sounded ghostly, and it seemed to come from everywhere. Probably because there are secret passages in that house.
For accusing Richard of murder.
And as a child, you discovered those passages. Yes, it was well done. And you know where the red coat is. And shall it show a missing button?
But you can't prove that Richard did
it. Richard, I defy you to take that glove off your hand and show us the mark of Cain that covers your palm.
Richard?
Yes, it's the mark of Cain. Here, look. I'm branded.
That great black mark.
It won't wash off. It won't rub off. I'm marked.
Oh, Richard.
No. No, don't come near me, Sarah. I'm unworthy.
Oh, why, Richard? Why?
He knows why. He knows why. It was the bitter bread of charity.
Oh, Richard.
No, don't weep for me. I'm unworthy. I wear the mark of Cain.
I'm sorry, Richard.
I will now walk down to the jail and hand myself over to Constable Partridge.
Let me come with you.
No. I must be alone. From now on, I have the mark.
Richard!
Yes. The mark.
The mark? That's impossible. I saw it with my own eyes.
Yes.
It's supernatural.
Not exactly.
Not exactly? Oh, sir, now what?
Well, if we assume that there cannot be ghosts, we must assume that someone human was playing the part. Logical?
Yes.
That someone human would have to get into the house in order to scare visitors. Only three of us knew I would be going there last night. You and I and Richard.
Yes?
Earlier in the evening, I smeared the doorknob with some nitrate of silver.
Nitrate of silver?
Yes, it is used in making mirrors. And when it touches the skin, it turns black, and it cannot be washed off or removed in any way until new skin grows.
That's black magic.
That's natural science. And our poor Richard entered the house through the front door, turned the knob, and thus his hand acquired the mark of Cain.
The mark of Cain. It exists on every murderer. The problem is to make it visible. For that, however, you need men of perception. Men like Benjamin Franklin. Well, poor Richard didn't hang. He went quite mad and spent the rest of his life in an asylum. Sarah went on to marry a very timid man and kept him under her thumb. And Franklin, as you well know, went on to become a founding father of this great country. And I shall be back in just a few moments.
I think it was the first time I can remember really going fishing with my dad. I'm sure I'd been with him before, but the first time I really remember it was wading downstream with him in an extra big pair of wading boots as he felt his way very surely along the stream bed, and I shakily held onto the willows, and we found a spot where my dad lifted his finger to his lips and said, "Shh, we don't want to scare the fish away." And then I remember that fish, the biggest fish I'd ever seen in my life, and it was on the end of my line. And my dad, boy, was he proud. I'll never forget that as long as I live.
Give your children everything. Give them your time. A thought from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons.
Chemist, psychologist, detective. Before these professions were even born, Benjamin Franklin exhibited a judgment and a depth of vision that is hardly equaled today. Yes, they were giants, those men who founded the country, and what they left us is not just a legacy, but a challenge to live as they did, fearless, curious, and independent. Our cast included Paul Hecht, Marion Seldes, Stotz Cotsworth, Russell Horton, and Gil Mack. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
I'll take my coffin and be on my way.
But, sir, you can't just walk out of here without...
Thanks to you for your efforts, and I wish you gentlemen good night's sleep.
Sir, come back.
Let him go, Mr. Rogers. He lifted that box as if it were as light as a feather.
Get your coat.
What for?
To follow him, Bill. Couldn't you see the man is ill?
We're the ones who are going to be ill if we follow him.
Stop babbling and get into your coat.
All right, I'll go with you. I don't want you following that spirit alone, but I tell you, he's not mortal.
He is, and he's sick, mentally ill. Hurry.
How far do we follow him?
As far as he goes.
No, sir, I won't, because I believe his destination is hell.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Bright and beautiful music comes your way from midnight to 6 in the morning. CBS News on the Hour, local news with George Good. My name's Bill Garrity. Have a good night tonight and a better day tomorrow. This is KOIN in Portland. The time is 12 midnight.
CBS News. The presidential palace in Saigon came under bombing attack today from the air, but President Tu says he will continue in office and that the attack was not an attempted coup. I'm Ann Crosman, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Tu said on nationwide radio that a group of people and not the armed forces was behind the attack. He and his family were not hurt, but two people were reported killed and three injured, all of them palace workers, when several bombs fell on the palace grounds. Newsman Peter Collins was on his way to work when the South Vietnamese Air Force plane made its attack. Collins describes the reactions of people in Saigon.
Most of the people stood transfixed in the streets looking at this spectacle of a modern fighter bomber swooping low over the palace with its jet engines roaring and dropping bombs. But as soon as people began realizing what was happening, they developed a sense of uncertainty, people running in odd directions, trying to take cover or standing in doorways looking anxiously out to see what was going to happen next.
The pilot of the plane is identified as Lieutenant Win Tan Trung, who was returning from a bombing mission when he struck at the palace. Unconfirmed reports say that Trung headed south, out to sea, after the attack. Another report says Trung's family was trapped in Da Nang last month when it fell to communists, and that his anger at the failure of government soldiers to evacuate them may have prompted today's action. 59 more Vietnamese war veterans arrived in California last night on board an American Air Force plane, and a second flight was en route with about 300 more children. More news coming up.
If you ever use a hemorrhoid preparation, you should know this. Vaseline Brands has news. It's Hemorrhoid Ointment. Hemorrhoid works fast, helps protect, with a proven medical ingredient for soothing occlusion. And Hemorrhoid gives you only this key ingredient, so it gives you more than the leading preparation. Now, at your first sign of pain, burning, and itching, turn to soothing Hemorrhoid. Hemorrhoid from Vaseline Brands. Use only as directed.
Hi, I'm Mike Roy here with Denny Bracken for the Cooking Thing.
And we're heard every Monday through Saturday on the CBS Radio Network. Now, let's see, tomorrow's Tuesday, so what treats do you have in the pantry for a chef?
Carrot cookies.
Eric, what is this, a Bugs Bunny act or something?
I
don't make carrots out of cookies or cookies out of carrots or vegetables.
It's all done all the time. And my carrot cookies are some of the best there are. Ask any rabbit. Easy to make, too.
Not at all modest, are you?
No.
That's the super chef there with his carrot cookies tomorrow on the Cook Thing on CBS.
The militant provisional wing of the Irish Republican Army says that its 9-week-old ceasefire in Northern Ireland is still in effect, but that it will take action against what it calls truce breakers. Peter Martin has more from Belfast.
The provisional IRA statement is interpreted here in Northern Ireland as a bit of brinkmanship. Guerrilla units in Northern Ireland have been given orders to shoot back if fired on by British soldiers or Protestant extremists. This apparently falls just short of ending the truce entirely. Seamus Loughran, the spokesman for Sinn Féin, the political wing of the IRA, says the new stance by the guerrilla army means the situation could deteriorate and the truce might eventually break down anyway. But Loughran says the British government must now make proper responses to salvage the truce. The IRA wants a faster release of men jailed without trial. It wants fewer soldiers in Catholic areas. It wants no attempt made to introduce what it calls a sectarian police force into Catholic areas. And the IRA wants an apology from the British Army for shooting two members of its political wing last month. The British government has made no response to the IRA's latest declarations, but is under pressure from Protestant militants again not to deal any further with the IRA. Peter Martin for CBS News, Belfast.
Army Secretary Howard Calloway says there's going to be a thorough review of the Army's equal opportunity policies covering military and civilian personnel assignments. The move follows a recent acknowledgement by the Army Corps of Engineers that it screened out Jewish workers from assignment to projects in Saudi Arabia. Now this message.
Morning. Greenhaven State Prison. Today, Jerry Rice is getting out. He paid for his mistake. We paid, too, about 10,000 tax dollars a year to keep him there. And unless he gets a job, he'll probably go back in.
Wait till your daddy sees you. He's not going to recognize you. Excited?
If you're someone with a job to give, you can do something about rising crime by giving a guy like Jerry Rice a job. He's been thoroughly screened, so you'll know all about him. You complain about rising crime and the billions of tax dollars used to fight it. Nothing can fight it better than jobs.
Welcome home, Daddy. Are you here forever?
Forever, honey.
The way to get this country working is to get people working. So if you have a job to give, call the National Alliance of Businessmen. Help America work.
A public service message of this station and the Advertising Council.
The Arkansas Supreme Court has struck down a section of a state law that says the state may not employ anyone belonging to a Nazi or a communist group. The court ruled that the wording of that part of the law was too broad. I'm Ann Crosman, CBS News.
A controversial field-burning measure is headed for the Oregon House. The Senate Monday approved, 19-11, a bill that would phase down open field-burning in the Willamette Valley over a period of 4 years. The bill would lift the ban on field-burning that went into effect last January 1st. It now heads for an uncertain fate in the House, where a special field-burning committee has been appointed. Governor Straub has given indications he might veto a 4-year extension of open burning should it be approved by the legislature. He favors an extension of no more than 2 years. Senate supporters of the 4-year phase-down say it is the best way to reduce open field burning without driving Oregon's $60 million grass seed industry out of business. But opponents say 4 years is too long and that the bill provides only a partial phase down instead of a total cutoff. A Washington presidential preference primary won the approval of the Washington State House Monday. The House voted 52-41 in favor of such a primary and dismissed objections from opponents that the primary would carry a $1.2 million price tag. Under terms of the measure approved by the House, the presidential primary would be held on the fourth Tuesday in May. The measure now goes to the House. Woodworkers continued striking Weyerhaeuser Company operations in the Willapaw Bay, Washington area Monday, but pickets were pulled out of the Grays Harbor area. The strike affected about 1,000 workers at its peak. About 600 still are involved. The dispute is about seniority and overtime. The head of the Bonneville Power Administration says he's upset with the Federal Power Commission. Don Hodell says the FPC is interfering with Pacific Northwest planning for expansion of its supply of electricity. 50-year-old Clark Leonard of Cornelius was reported in good condition Monday night in a Forest Grove hospital after falling over an embankment near Elsie and tumbling 200 feet. He broke his shin bone in the fall and had to wait 6 hours before another motorist pulled into the same turnoff on Highway 26. The motorist, Dan Williams, saw Leonard at the bottom of the embankment and called for help. Leonard said he lost his balance when he got out of his car to get a good look at Saddle Mountain. The Portland-Vancouver weather, mostly fair today, Tuesday through Wednesday, with lows of 30 to 35 degrees and highs in the mid-50s. Variable winds 5 to 12 miles per hour. The chance of measurable rainfall near 10% through Tuesday night. Downtown Portland currently, the temperature is reading 41 degrees. And that's KOIN-AM and KOIN-FM News to 1209. This is George Good.